Okay, recordings have started.
Thank you, Sierra. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the Translation and Transliteration of Contact Information PDP Working Group on Thursday, the 10th of July, 2014. On the call today, we have Rudy Van Snick, Howard Lee, Jim Galvin, Klaus Stahl, Jennifer Chung, Wolf Ulrich Nobin, Peter Dernbach, and Wen Zai. We have apologies from Chris Dillon. From staff, we have Lars Hoffman, Julie Hedlund, and myself, Terry Agnew. I'd like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and back over to you, Rudy.
Thank you, Terry. So there, with this, we have executed point two of the agenda, and as usual, we will check the statement of interest. If there are any changes, please speak up. Hearing none and not seeing any comments in the chat room, we can then enter into what Chris has been extensively working on and proposed for this meeting call to discuss the final report from the expert working group on GTLD directory service. Did I hear somebody speaking up? No? Okay. I don't know if we can have... we have the list of pages that Chris has mentioned and that are of interest for our working group, especially for the phase where we have to start producing some reports, written reports, on what we got back from the different stakeholders, being the SOs and ACs. As we know, we still are waiting for others, for other inputs to enable us to have a full overview. However, Chris has also been working on another document that we will probably try to share with you in the for the next call or the call after the next week. I think that indeed it's good if we could go through the pages that he indicated being of importance for us. And I think that on some of the pages, if we have some questions, we can call on Jim to give additional comments on the pages. I don't know if we can have the page 14 of that report in the Adobe Connector. Okay. Thank you, Lars.
Hi, this is Julie. Actually, I'm manipulating it. I took the document off sync just now so that everybody can go ahead and page through it as they like. As noted in the suggestions that I had put up there, we're looking at page 14 to start with.
Thank you, Julie. We have the diagram, the presentation of the flow of information into the proposed new mechanism, being the RDS. What is of importance for us is especially, as far as I have recognized, is the block where it is mentioned validators. The normal process is that data is going to the registrars, and from the registrars goes into the WHIS database, which in this case is the GTLD registry's data storage, where we will have the data collected, and then the data will be synchronized in the registry directory services platform. I think the validators is the one that could be of concern for us if validators are eventually translators or official or bodies that are willing to validate the data itself, I think it's important that we recognize this party in the process. I don't know if, Jim, you have any additional information on the definition of the validators in this case.
Well, thank you, Rudy. This is Jim. I think an important question is whether or not translation and transliteration would be occurring there. You know, then we'll need to consider more of the requirements or responsibilities on that particular component. But I don't think we've really committed to where we think that function might occur if it's going to. So it's a little hard, difficult to comment too strictly. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim, for the additional information. Indeed, it's an important question that we will probably have to put on the table in the next weeks for clarification if that's what would be considered under the label validators. But we will have other topics where we will probably have similar questions and doubts, and we will probably need to address the ICANN board to have more clarification if that's a part of our task, yes or no. I would then move to page 20. I've been printing them out. It was a bit easier to follow in case I couldn't have Adobe available on my screen. So on page 20, you will see also a diagram that the figure one that is called needs analysis. We see several items popping up that are of importance for us. Again, it's the block at the, or the round, the oval at the right under, right corner, validation and accuracy requirements, which is again the question of what kind of validation should be done and what are the accuracy requirements. As far as I've been in the report, I have not seen yet any clear definition also about what is considered being in under that topic. Is that also taking in consideration translation and or transliteration? So far, I didn't see any. But it's important that we have we can point back to the report and highlight the fact that it is mentioned that a certain validation could occur. It's again in the context of the initial question that we have, is it desirable to have translation or transliteration? That's the initial question. And having these items being mentioned, validation, Jim, we are on page 20 at this moment, on the figure one needs analysis. I will try to not forget that I mentioned the page at each time I'm changing the topic. I don't think that there is much more to talk about on this slide, on this presentation, this figure. It's good that we know that it is taken into consideration and that we can eventually point back to the fact that if we need to respond to the question, is it desirable, we can probably point to that point in the report. I don't know if there is any other remarks or comments on this. If you just raise your hand, I can follow up on the Adobe screen and that you're coming in the discussions. So the next page is page 21, the next page, where we will go to the bottom of the page. It's about the users. Well, it's on, you have the top, the figure two. The users are, in fact, here, the users of the database of the registration system. We have all, in fact, all the stakeholders mentioned in that list, in that figure. But there is a detailed description that follows below, which is the table just at the end of the page, of page 21, where there is a clarification on who is considered being a registrant. I'm still on page 21. And it continues on page 22, where we have examples of data that is going to be addressed and used or provided by the registrant. And further on, we have this definition of protected registrant, where it is considered that the data, the contact data, would be under the topic of privacy and should be hidden for public access. And we have the, I'm on page 22 at this moment in the table. We have the technical issue resolution, where for technical reasons there is need to have access to the contact data. I presume that most of us have already touched upon these different items. There are certification authorities mentioned in that table too. I think certification authority means again that we most probably will have a kind of validation done by that authority. And the question is, would they consider translation and or transliteration of the data, yes or no? It's maybe a stakeholder group that we need to address if we want to go a bit more in depth on the responses to our questions. And we have the individual internet users still on page 22, where it is everybody in the world that wants to know who is the owner, who is the registrant of that domain. That's the general public, I would say. And at that point, that's the stakeholder we have been talking about also. But then it's the individual who will be enabled to translate and use translation or transliteration tools available to him or her in order to be able to translate. And in that case, I would say the response to is it desirable would probably be no, because it's available for any user in the world to have a translation of data that is provided on the screen. At least that's my perception. I see Jim's hand raised. Yes, Jim, you have the floor.
Yes, Rudy, thank you. This is Jim. So I want to say that I agree with you and add something. I think that as we consider here whether or not there will be translation and transliteration, and we consider where it's going to be, I think there's a valuable matrix, if you will, or cross relationship that we can show between the purposes of data and the users of that data, because we could define. I'm imagining that we could define the purpose and place of translation and transliteration based on how we might align users with purposes. We might decide that a particular user needs translation and transliteration, which will drive its existence in a particular purpose, or we could take it from the other direction. And I think that, you know, we could draw from this report and these diagrams quite nicely if we were to do something like that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jim, for this additional information. It's indeed something that we have been talking about a few months ago to try to provide a kind of matrix that would enable us to see the purposes of the translation or transliteration. I said the question, is it desirable, should have probably more than one condition. It can be desirable for the purpose of, yes, it's good for people to have access to data that they are not able to read due to the language differences. But it's also, as you were mentioning, Jim, the purpose of it. Who is using the translated information or the transformed information at that stage? I think that's a quite interesting discussion that we could have later on. I think that at this point it's quite clear that there is a need for additional work on the purposes of the questioning. I'm just scrolling through the other table. I'm on page 23 and 24. You will see that we have the other stakeholders, and there is a list of stakeholders mentioned on page 32. It's in fact a list that indicates already what are the purposes of each stakeholder. That can be very helpful for us too in with regards the matrix we want to produce. So page 34, I'm moving over to that page now. It's a long list. It's page 32 and 33 up to till page 34, if I'm not wrong. That's the full list of all the stakeholders that are, in fact, or that have been addressed in this report. It's a very extensive list, very interesting, as it gives a view on who is involved in or would be involved in the new RDS platform. And then on page 34, I've made myself some remarks. Page 34, I'm talking about the second paragraph that starts at the same time, registrants of domain names may desire, depending on their local jurisdiction, to privacy. They may not want their contact details made public. That's indeed the topic of the privacy of contact information that would not allow to have a public translation and or transliteration, but could only be done by a specific group of stakeholders. I think it's important that we keep this distinction that there is, as far as I'm concerned, a difference between what is publicly available and what is not publicly available due to privacy rules. I think that could be one of the conditional elements in our recommendation that if it's publicly not available, well, I would say it is not desirable to translate if it's not available for the public, and it's for a very specific group that the translation or transliteration would be made available. And in the third paragraph, it's even clearly mentioned, halfway the paragraph, there is a sentence, at the very least, however, any domain name must have one or more publicly published, accurate, and reachable contact that may respond to external queries and provide a point of reference for permissible purposes of external actors who are affected by the existence or operations of a domain name. It's a quite important sentence where, in fact, I feel a little bit of contradiction with the fact that if I want to keep my privacy, I would not allow to make data public. I don't know if the expert working group have tried to make a distinction between what is officially allowed to be hidden and what is officially not allowed to be hidden. Maybe, Jim, is that something that the work group has been discussing, the separation between what is allowed to be hidden and what is not allowed to be hidden?
So this is Jim. I'm not sure I understand the question. Which work group are you referring to when you ask about a discussion?
I'm talking about this expert working group that has been working on this report. I don't know if you have any additional information.
No, I don't have any special information regarding this directory services report. I was not part of this working group. If you're talking about the registration data working group, no, we haven't talked about the privacy considerations in particular. That's not really a question that's in scope. We're really talking about the data and the requirements on data that exists. We're not talking about the scope of data as it's used.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jim. Which makes clear that something that Chris, Julie, Laz, and myself have tried to figure out already in previous discussions, and we had a call yesterday to prepare this call also, that there is a lot going on, in fact, the same kernel that we have to work on, but that there are there is no definition or a global definition across the working groups and studies on what is being considered in, for instance, as I was explaining, what is considered being allowed to be hidden under the umbrella of privacy and what's not allowed to be hidden. That's the question that I'm trying to figure out for myself for a while already. Yes, Jim, you have the floor.
Yes, thank you, Rudy. I guess I want to add to my comment before, maybe clarify a little bit with respect to the registration data working group that I'm involved with. I said before that we're not worried about the use of the data. That's not really a completely accurate statement. Our charter is about requirements for the data in order to support submission and display. So, you know, display obviously is use of the data, but we're not, when I said that we're not thinking about the use, you know, our concerns are not the same ones that this directory services group was concerned with. I mean, we're just concerned that the data itself technically can be displayed. Whether or not it should be displayed and who should have access to that display are the use questions that would be out of scope for the group that I'm involved with. This directory services group is attempting to answer those questions or at least speak to those issues. So I don't know if that helps this discussion, but I realize that for the purposes of the archive here, I wanted to clarify my comment from earlier. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Indeed, it helps. The more clarity we can have on where the limits are and what the purpose or the goals of and objectives of the charter of a working group are, the better we will understand if there is additional working group, yes or no. I see also Peter Denbach. Yes, Peter, you have the floor.
Yes, Rudy, I was just going to say that I had a slightly different reading of that portion that you were quoting from page 34. The, at the very least, however, any domain name must have one or more publicly published, accurate, and reachable contacts that may respond to external queries and provide a point of reference for permissible purposes of external actors. I understood that to be that if the individual registrant went through a privacy or protection or a proxy service, that the registration data had to show published, accurate, reachable contact information for that privacy or proxy service, and that they would be in a position to respond to external queries, so that the privacy would still be protected by another level there, but that the users who would either have public access or gated access to information would be given access to accurate information that would identify one party that could be a reachable contact that could respond.
Thank you, Peter. That's a good point. It all depends how you read the sentences, and that makes it interesting to have as many eyes as possible on this report in order to be able to get clarity on what is meant by the wordings. Indeed, it could be that the consideration here is about proxy services, for instance, and in that case, indeed, there is information that should be available if the proxy service is queried. But it needs, again, a clear definition. That's one of the things that I'm really trying to wonder how it would be possible to have clear definitions on what is meant by certain information that is provided. At the end, I think of a glossary on what's discussed in the different reports would help a lot in order to make it easy for anybody to understand what the definition and the goal of it is. Yes, Peter, you have the floor.
This is Peter Dornbach again for the transcript. I completely agree with you on that point, that I think that a glossary or something where we can get some agreed-upon terms would be very helpful, because we're looking at this report, the report of the earlier study, and there are a number of different materials that we're using that are using slightly different terms for similar concepts. So I think that would be very helpful. When you were saying that, I just didn't want to be confused. I think that that portion was saying that even if it's protected through a privacy proxy, that there should be publicly available information so that the external actors who do want to have a contact do have an accurate information and a reachable contact, but that contact may well not be the registrant, but may be a privacy or proxy service. That was my understanding, but again, there are a number of issues that we could get more clarification on.
Fully agree with you, Peter, on this point, and as you say, there should be, in the case of a proxy, for instance, the data should be available of the proxy service itself, and that's the point where eventually, as we know that proxies have some specific objectives, that they could say, well, we put the information in a language that nobody, that only a certain group in the world can read. Then the question, is it desirable to translate? I would say yes, indeed, in that case. But that's, again, the point of what's the purpose of the translation. It's an interesting point, and I think we will have some discussions later on in the next weeks and calls to try to go a bit more in-depth on the definitions to allow us to be clear in our report what we mean with what we are bringing as a recommendation forward. I think we have had a quite extensive discussion on this part of the report already. Going to page 43, that is, again, it's the list of items in a table, and we are talking about, so page 43, and it's about point 30 in the table. It's all about the contact information. And again, it's touching upon the issues of the privacy as well as on the proxy services. And there is a sample of data that would be provided. In that case, it looks to me that that could be indeed very good qualified data that should be made available. I don't know if there are any questions or comments on this item. I think it's good that we pull eventually out of this table what is written there in order to allow us to point back in our reports to what other working groups have brought forward. And then we have, I saw there was another point that, if we go on page 44, that's correct, yeah, 44, we see a list of, in number 32, there are data elements that are defined to be mandatory. And one of the informations is mentioning specifically, it's point G, registration agreement language. So there is a definition and a clarification on what is the language of the registration in that case. It's one of the first times that in the data model there is a reference to language. However, I'm not sure that the inspiration came from the fact that there is another working group thinking about translation and transliteration. But you never know. I think that is also important to pick that up for our future reportings. And then in on page 45, in point 34, we have again the sentence that is informing us on validators that may collect, store, or disclose additional data elements for internal use that is never shared with the RDS. That could be, in our case, indeed, the translated data that could be eventually stored aside the RDS. That's at least what I understood from that report. This is a way that the validator could be a translation office or a body that is validating the information through translation or transliteration. That could be a case for our discussion, I think so. Then going to page 58, we have the data access principles. Jumping to that page. I don't know if anybody else has seen anything interesting in the previous pages. Don't hesitate to put your hand up and bring it to the table. I'm looking into page 58. Oops. I don't know why my screen jumped all of a sudden. To another page. Back. Here I am. It's about sorry, I was on the wrong page. We have a list of the data of registrant that is mentioned on top of the page. It is again a list of all the items that should be used as being contact information for the registrant, and that is initially what concerns us for our working group. I think it's just a question of taking note of all the information that is provided on that page with regards to the registrant. I think that there is a more important information on page 60. 60, where it's about the items 53 and 54. Where we have the text for point 53, to be truly global, the RDS must accommodate the display of registration data in multiple languages, scripts, and character sets, including internationalized domain names. So it is clear that from the work group, the expert working group in this case, that there should be space in the data model to allow registration in multiple languages. And that's in fact something that points back to the work group, expert working group, where Jim has been involved in trying to define the data model for the RDS. And I think that that has been also mentioned in that report too, that data could be stored in, for instance, as a sample in XML tag format, so that you can identify which language it is. The data model itself, as far as I remember, did not specify, for instance, a street in a native language and a field street in a translated language. But again, to be sure, I'm asking confirmation by Jim. Is that correct, that there is no duplication of fields in the contact data that allows registration of two or more languages?
So this is Jim. Yes, actually, the current data model, the data model itself, which is under discussion and draft, we only had principles that we had done in the interim report for the registration data, internationalized registration data expert working group. But certainly one of the topics that is under discussion is dependency on the results of this working group. You know, if a decision is made that there must be a single language or script, and then that translation and transliteration, you know, could occur, we will probably, the discussion topic is recognizing that you will probably need to store two versions of data. You'll need the original. You'll always want to keep track of exactly what you got from the registrant. And then also taking on recommendations that came from the commissioned study that was recently published on solutions for translation and transliteration. Transformations more generally is the term that they adopted using. You'll need to keep track of the original language and script, and then if you transform it in any way, you'll need to store that separately and indicate that it's a transformation, and also keep track of when that transformation occurred. And then you'll have issues of keeping those two things in sync, and you know whether or not you actually did validate that they match, and how you validated them. So the presence of transformation brings additional constraints and requirements on registration data and all of the players here in the system that we're talking about. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jim, for the clarification. Very helpful. As I'm, I have a technical background, I'm too often jumping to the technical details. And it is clear, and I thank Lars and Julie to help me staying aligned on what the goal and the objectives are of our working group. Our working group has not to define the technical solutions how to do the translation and or transliteration, but indeed I think it helps that we can point to solutions that could be used. And in fact, point 53 and 54 in this report gives a clear view on, and even 55, it gives a clear view on what is important and gives some directives to other groups on what to consider if this would happen. I think that we can move forward now to, still have 40 minutes left, we can move to page 62, where we have the point C. It's at the end of the page almost. It's entitled RDS User Accreditation Principles. As noted in Section 3, the purposes, and some purposes require access to all gated elements or an approved subset of gated data elements. The principle under number 64, any purpose requiring access to gated data requires user accreditation. That's a quite important sentence. It looks like it's the user who has to do the accreditation in this case. And again, the gated data is still for me not that clear, except that when we look into the graph that is just above, it's at the top of the page, the data that is in fact queried is called the gated data here, except if I'm misunderstanding the drawing of that information. And then it's mentioned all access must be purpose-based, returning only data elements permitted for the stated purpose. And it goes back to what Jim has said earlier also, that it all depends on what is the purpose of the data that we want to address or query, and what would we do with the data that we are gathering. But I didn't see any specific items that would help us in clarifying the answers to our questions. It's clear that there are many stakeholders involved at the stage of collecting data or gathering data from queries, but at that point it's rather, for me, the use of the data and not the storage of the data. And use of data can always be handled by anybody, to any tool that is not engaging, in this case, ICANN in the responsibility of the data that is made available. I don't know if there are any other additional comments or questions on this page. If not, Chris mentioned page 69 as being the next one. I have another call in 10 minutes. Going to page 69. It's mentioning the validation of data, the validation principles. Trying to jump so that I have the page in front of me. What is meant here, as far as I could understand from the report, it's a kind of pre-validation of the registrant or contact information of the registrant. And when reading through the text, to increase the accuracy of contact information by utilizing pre-validation to check data prior to use for a new domain name and to promote consistent data across all registrations, which reduce error and fraud, of course. That indeed, if the language is a language you're not able, or the validator is not able to read or understand, it could make this assumption difficult. The next bullet is avoid the need to validate registrant or other PBC contract data each time a registrant registers a new domain name by performing validation once and then reusing that block of contact data for several domain registrations. It would simplify the process and reduce work requirements. But again, in the context of translation and or transliteration, it makes it not that easy. If you do the validation starting from the translated data, I think that we would end up in maybe more errors than we won't get. And the third bullet is avoid delay in the processing of a domain registration, since validation has to take place at the time of registration. And that's indeed an issue for us too, in the sense that translation and or transliteration could require rereading if the automatic system would not allow to have a correct translation done. It means there is a validation process of that translation, and that could take some time. So in that case, I think we have to keep that in mind, that it would block the registration of a domain name, and then the whole question is, if that blocks the registration of that domain, would the same domain name registered by somebody else in the native Roman language, for instance, script language, have priority on the one that is in validation process? That's still a question that I think will be needed to be responded to in a later stage. But it's important that there is a kind of point back in this report for our questions. I don't know if there is any other comment on this text. If not, let's move to page 71, where there is the pre-validation process explained. It's almost by point C. I took some notes earlier. It's about the point C. Where there is again pointed to the validators, and an example in this case was the post offices. the CCTLD managers, the telephone companies, that would be able, and we have been talking earlier already about UPU, that is using certain standards for validation of contact data. And I think that's one of the points that they are trying to raise here too. Could be helpful for our report later on to pick up on this page too, I think. Then we have costs and impacts, which is a very interesting one, and that's on page 117. We make a big jump now. The costs and impact. Beginning of the page. When we read through that through those two paragraphs, and I'm reading especially the second one where it is mentioned the cost of operating rules are unknown today, but include costs to the entire ecosystem, not just to the registries and registrars who offer the RUIS services. We have this question also on who would burden the cost of translation and or transliteration, and we have here already a sentence that is mentioning that the cost is actually unknown so far for the management of the RUIS data and operating the RUIS data. That means that it is probably not easy for us to give an indication on this one. They were also referring to the use of the trademark clearinghouse, where the holders of a trademark will pay for the service that the brand protection companies and or commercial risk services are going to deliver. It could be quite similar to our approach that the cost and who pays for it could be indicated through a same approach, saying, okay, this can be covered by those who are asking for the translation or transliteration. Being close to the end of the hour, page 119 is about the international the international registration data, and it's also talking on to the RIA. I would presume that we can just jump that page and go to page 121, where there is the discussion on the use of EPP. Going to page 121, as I said. It is clear if we need, if we want to get the data stored or delivered by the registration process in different languages, that the EPP will be there will be need for a review of the EPP process, as actually there is in the existing RFC. There is no information on, or there is no definition of several or use of several languages in the contact data. So that would probably also have an impact on the whole implementation process. But as mentioned earlier in this report, that the, if there is need for registration in multiple languages, there should be an, a modification done in the data model, and that will have impact on the EPP anyway. And impact EPP means registry, registrar. That could be a huge cost if that has to be done for the actual rollout of the new GTLDs. I think that that is almost unfeasible today because the RFC should be first rewritten. There should be a new version before we can start having new EPP developments. So that's what our colleague Chris has been bringing forward for this call. I think there is a lot of useful information and data that we need to keep track on and maybe have bringing them in our document in order to be able to provide an first initial reporting on based on the reports that the answers that we got back. I don't know if there is any other information or remarks or comments that we want to talk about now. Is there anything under the all of the business that we need to talk about? We will, based on the doodle, it is clear that the time slot that we have been chosen from the beginning seems to be the most desired one. So we will keep on doing the calls at the same time, the same day, which leads me to the next call next week, where I think that Chris is also not available for that call. So I will prepare that one together with Laz and Julian in the next few days also. But I propose that based on what we discussed today, that you go through the report eventually also and try to highlight things that you think are of concerns. So not seeing any additional comments or remarks, no hands up. I would like to thank you all for this call and see you all next week. Have a nice weekend.
Thank you for
joining. Thanks, Rudy. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining. This concludes the conference call. All participants may disconnect at this time.